Welcome to another episode of Streamed and Screened, the podcast about movies and TV shows, and in this case, award shows, hosted by myself, Chris Lay, the podcast operations manager for Lee, and Bruce Miller, longtime entertainment reporter and editor at the Sioux City Journal. Bruce?
I have to be so excited because our dear friend Diane Warren, remember how this podcast has been really her biggest advocate. We have been wanting to see Diane finally win an Oscar. After 12 nominations, she got an honorary Academy Award at the governor's dinner the other night. And when she announced that she had won, she also paid a note to us by using the story that we had about her 12 times a bridesmaid, never a bride. So God bless her. She still remembers us. She still remembers that we were pushing for her, and we are so thrilled. And if you happen to see online, she went to bed with the Oscar. She promised that she would go to bed with the Oscar. She did. So congratulations to Diane Warren, who won finally after all these years. And she should be nominated again this year because she's got another song that's in the running. And I've already seen ads for it. And I think, you know what? She could pull it off. We've got a long season ahead of us. We'll see where it lands, and we'll make sure we mention her because we want her to have two, not just one.
She's got to catch up. Got to have the win-loss ratio is now, it's on the upswing, and we got to keep that momentum.
One out of 13.
Speaking of Oscars, who do we have on the show this week?
You know, we used to be in a whole kind of Oscar look podcast, and then we expanded a bit, but this is a really, really cool interview, and I'm not saying that because we were involved. But Bruce Davis was an executive director of the Academy for many, many years.
25 some odd years, give or take,
yeah, I think. A long time. So he knows the ins and outs of the Academy better than anybody. And he has written a book called The Academy and the Award. And if you're a hardcore Oscar person like I am, you want to dig in and get that book, because it tells secrets like you've never heard before. He had access to files that most people don't ever see. Even if you're working there, I'm sure they have these rooms that are off limits to mere mortals. But he had access to all of this, and he decided to write the story, the true story, because there are a lot of theories that are out there about how the Oscar got named, you know, how they pick people, how they have five nominees in a category or 10, what all of that is about. And he reveals some information that you have never heard anywhere else. I promise you that right now, that you are going to get some scoops that you never heard. This is the kind of stuff you want to hear. But Bruce Davis, lots of fun, and I think you're going to like him.
And we'll have links to the book in the show notes. We'll have links to where you can find all things Bruce Davis. Yeah. Take it away, Bruce and Bruce.
We have a plethora of Bruces today, but I'm the lesser Bruce today because I have Bruce Davis here with us, who is the new author of The Academy and the Award, a book about the Academy Awards. And I am such a hardcore fan of the Oscars that I was devouring this. I'm not done, so don't tell me how it ends, because I don't want to have any spoilers in this. I was fascinated by this. Now, because you were an executive with the Academy, you had access to the files. Is that right?
Yes. In particular, I think the thing that I had that no one else has had is the minutes of the governors through the years, which actually start before the Academy quite existed. The first meetings are about, should we have an Academy? And what would it do if we did? And that sort of thing. And then it kind of comes together, and they kept very careful records through the years, although they were jumping ahead. There were times when the Academy almost died because they had such problems in the Depression era.
They had financial problems, which you never kind of think with the Oscars. You think, well, they've got to be flush all the time. But there was really a financial burden on them.
Constantly. I had not understood that. The whole time I was working there, I thought, okay, I know pretty much about this organization, but I hadn't really systematically gone back and looked up records and everything. But you've put your finger on the most astonishing thing that I found out, which was that they were always living hand to mouth. No sooner had the Academy been born then the Depression hit. There was no means of income. This was way before any kind of television contract, or even there were years in there where they broadcast it on radio for free. They never made any money even at that point. It was very bizarre. And between that and hostilities with the forming guilds in the industry, there was a point where they had almost no means of support.
Well, and wasn't there a time when actually they were kind of seen as an alternative to the guilds to kind of tamp them down a bit? And so there'd be a little more control on the part of the studios?
That was the original idea with Louis B. Mayer, who I think has to be given credit for beginning the organization, for suggesting it. And he was very much concentrating on, let's not have guilds, let's not have unionization of this wonderful industry of ours. But when he got to the point where he invited artists in, when you start talking about screenwriters and cinematographers and all those talented people, they weren't as worried about the labor situation as they were about convincing the world that they were making art, which was not generally recognized. And that was what they got excited about.
The Academy of Arts and Sciences, where it has kind of a heady feeling to it. It's not just, we're people who hand out awards. You know, it had a high calling, I think.
Very much, yeah. And in fact, they almost didn't get the awards business going. There was enormous resistance to the idea of awards. People made fun of it. They said, well, there are these major studios, and they're all going to vote for whatever movies they made, whatever people made films in their studio. And so it took a while to convince the people who were supposed to be giving out these awards that it wasn't a waste of time.
Well, and in those early years, too, there were people that, you know, you questioned, should they have won, or why did they win? Or I think you had one year in there where the person who had the most, had the biggest amount of support wasn't even on the final five, and they had to add her in.
And they hadn't quite figured out how to do it that year. That was very early on. And they did it sort of backwards in terms of the way they've done it ever since. They started with the mass of members and asked them, anybody from any branch could suggest, they weren't exactly voting, but they could suggest that so-and-so did a really good job with cinematography and so-and-so thought gave great performance. And then they took all those suggestions, and then they got down to the experts in the various fields and had the tiny little groups make the decisions about who really should get the award. Finally, they thought, okay, we should do it the other way around. We should start with the branches who are the experts in these various fields and let them decide on the field. And then the whole academy can vote on every category for the award. And that has worked out much better. But yeah, it was very odd. You're talking about a year when there were pretty clear indications that Murray Pickford was the one who was tied for the most suggestions. And then when the little group got together, she wasn't on the ballot of nominations, which was a shock. She was married to the president, Douglas Fairbanks, and she was probably the most famous movie star in the world. And she had gotten the most votes, but they didn't give it to her. They didn't put her on the ballot. And they were still kind of trying to work out this. And the executives got together and said, something's going wrong here. We need to add her to the ballot anyway. And final vote, turned out she won. So
she won. Maybe this is one that Tom Cruise should be saying all these years. You know, I was really the one who should have won, but they just did the balloting wrong. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? We were looking through those files. Did they have vote totals? Could you tell who had how many votes for each year? Or was that still a secret?
They had. In fact, I say in the book, when I started opening these boxes full of early, early records, one of the first ones was full of the ballots for the first year, which were signed. I mean, they were sitting in there, and it was before Price Waterhouse. And once they counted them, somebody put them in a banker's box or some kind of a box and tucked them away. And there they were. You could see who voted for what, because they weren't secret in the first year. So that was an early exciting kind of thing. Yeah, they obviously the governors could have known what the totals were, but they decided early on not to announce that. They didn't need to designate somebody as coming in last, you know.
Would that ever happen, do you think? Would we ever find out the vote totals?
I wouldn't think so. I would be fascinated to see them. But another part of me knows that that's kind of a sleazy wish. It's better not to know.
Do you believe that there really were ties? Do you think there really could be ties? Or was it so close that you just say, oh, they're both going to get it?
Well, that's an interesting thing that you raise. Yeah, I think there's every reason to think that there were occasional ties. We know some of the later history, two people come up and they each get awards. But there was one year when they were doing an odd thing. They were worried about the members not voting in as heavy in a number as they would prefer. So they left it open until you could bring your ballot to the awards ceremony. And guys over in the side of the hall were counting them all while people were eating dinner. And so there was some sloppiness there, and they couldn't remember exactly what they had decided would happen in the case of ties. And there was one year there where if anybody was within two votes of somebody else, that would be called a double win. But what they really said was there'll be a gold one and then there'll be a bronze one. So it was pretty clear that they were looking for dead ties for this. And I don't think anyone had ever thought to bring a bronze one along to the ceremony just in case somebody came within a vote or two. So it needed to be firmed up. And eventually, of course, Price Waterhouse took over and didn't start screwing up until much later in history.
And then we have the wrong one mentioned, but that's, you know, hey, that's current history. Yeah. When you look at the actual awards that they gave out, why didn't they give everybody a statuette to begin with? Why did they have those like little supporting plaque-like things? Why was it that only certain categories got the big ones?
You can see them kind of feeling their way through the how the awards should work. And there was just a kind of a sense that the really important ones are Best Picture and Best Director and this, that, and the other. But yeah, there were kind of what we would think of as sort of major categories where, like if you won the best song, you got a what they called a plaque. And they did go back and let people have a...
Read them in.
They worked that out. But yeah, for a long time, there were kind of A categories and B categories.
Well, in the war years, they had plaster Oscars. Did you ever get to see the one that they still have? And what did it look like? Did it look as good as a real Oscar?
No. I not only got to see it, it was in my closet for about 20 years. And then that was along with the damaged Oscars. Oscars would fall off of mantles in an earthquake and somebody would come in, look, it broke in two. And we would replace those. If it was still in control of the original recipient or we had a kind of chain of command.
And the plaster one looked okay or it didn't?
No, they looked terrible. One of the things I found out in the process of doing this research was that one that we had always thought was the only surviving plaster Oscar wasn't really. It had to have been a stage prop. There were several of those around. At rehearsals for the Oscars, different people would come out and hand somebody a plaster one. But no one seems to have thought at the end of the war to keep a plaster one for the historical record. That should be in the museum. But the one that we have, I could prove, wasn't a World War II plaster statuette. So unfortunately, we don't have that. You said, does it look the same? No, I don't think they look the same. They looked okay at a distance, but gold paint doesn't look like gold gilt, you know, real gold. So almost anybody who had a chance to turn in the plaster ones at the end of the war took advantage of that.
Okay, go in that closet for me then. How many of those returned or damaged Oscars did you have? Were there quite a few?
There were. I don't know that I ever counted them, but what was interesting was I thought, there's no reason for us to have these. bent and broken up ones. And yet I don't want to just throw them in the big dumpster outside, because somebody, sure enough, will go dumpster diving. And pretty soon, you know, on eBay, you'll find people selling half of an Oscar or whatever. So there was a problem. Okay, well, then how do we destroy them safely so we don't see pieces of them coming up on the black market? And I will confess, I actually took one home and got a hacksaw and thought, all right, let's see how hard it is. And it was a lot of work. They were made of a pretty soft metal at this point, but still, it was a lot of work. And finally, somebody said, well, you should go to those guys who destroy documents, who just, So I looked around, and sure enough, there was such a company, and they agreed to come back up their big machine in the back of the academy. And I said, well, let's test one. So they turned it on. Great, powerful blades were whirring, and we dropped the statue in, and it was like, brrr, that was it. It was gone. It was shrapnel. And so I said, all right, that'll work. Put all the rest of them through.
Oh, no.
And do what you do with the metal. But yeah, we destroyed maybe 17, 18 at that point.
Oh, it would have killed me. I couldn't have done it. They would be like children. You know, I wouldn't do it.
I won't say it didn't sadden me a little, but I was glad to have them out of the way.
Like, would they be missing a head, or would they be?
Yes. If it falls off and falls right on its head, at the best, it would bend. But yeah, I did have at least one decapitated one. The ankles are a weak spot also, and sometimes they would bend there. You can't just bend them back. They're done when they get.
It must be nice to have Oscars in your office. I would love that. I think that'd be a cool thing.
Well, I didn't have many. And as I say, I kept those in a locked cabinet with a number of other strange things.
Over the years, though, I've noticed that it does look different. The base seems to be the big changer. Sometimes it looks like it's a metal base. Sometimes it looks like just a black kind of base. Has that changed a lot? I know that in the first years, they were shorter.
That's right.
But I look at one from like the 70s or the 80s, and they almost look like they had a silver base. Is that true or not?
Well, you're watching very carefully. Yeah. The original ones have a stone base called Belgian, or sometimes Belgium marble. It's not a true marble, but it's a nice black stone that they could cut in. And it has a couple of steps up to the statuette proper, and it's bolted to the statuette. After the war, that began to get expensive. It was hard to find. So that's when they changed to a metallic base. And it was during the war that the taller version, the statuette proper, never changes. But the base, as you've correctly spotted, is taller. And that kind of makes it thinner also. The base is taller and thinner after the war. So yeah, there is a distinction in those years.
Well, and then when somebody turns one down, do you still keep them? Are they still there somewhere?
No. The ones that are handed out on an Oscar night, except for the honoraries. The honoraries have the nameplate on them. And obviously no one has ever rejected an honorary Oscar, but everything else is blank. They all look the same. And if somebody rejects one, which has only happened a couple times in history, as I bet you know, they just go back into the cupboard, the very closely guarded cupboard, and the next guy in line will get that one.
Okay, so they're not sitting there like this will suddenly go back to George C. Scott if he wants one, but it doesn't happen like that.
Yeah, if he had let us know at any point during his life, we would have given him one, but it wouldn't have been the same one he would have gotten had he accepted it in the year he was nominated.
Did Marlon Brando ever take his, or was that still no, I don't want it?
Well, that's a very complicated and interesting story. And when we say his, we're talking about his second one, the Godfather one.
He kept the first one.
That had a complicated life too, because early in his career, he gave that one away to somebody and couldn't even remember who had it. And then his daughter tracked it down, and that got into a weird legal thing. But the one that he rejected, that he had Sasheen Littlefeather turned down, I don't know whether I should tell you this whole story or not. Roger Moore was the presenter who would have presented it to Mr. Brando had he shown up. Liv Ullmann was the co-presenter. And so Sasheen Littlefeather says, no, thank you. And she goes back to her seat and Roger Moore is standing there holding an Oscar. And we had nobody assigned to pick up Oscars that had been rejected. It just wasn't something that happened. So Roger Moore went back to his seat and kept it for a while, took it to parties, several parties during the evening. It had a very good time. A lot of ladies liked to see James Bond with an Oscar. And so he took it back home. And a couple of weeks later said, oh, we should turn that back into the Academy. And his publicist brought it back. And it arrived the same day that we got a package from a member of Charlie Chaplin's family. And that person said, Mr. Chaplin's Oscar was broken in shipping. And I'm sending it back here. Is there any chance of getting it replaced? And so the then executive director, not me, but my predecessor, had just gotten the Roger Moore one back. He said, yes,
we sent that one?
Charlie Chaplin has Marlon Brando's Oscar. That's a pretty good story. Right. How about that?
Yeah. I know that you now put numbers on everything, so you could track them if somebody came and said, wait a minute, I lost my Oscar. Where is it? And then it shows up somewhere.
Yes.
But in those early years, they weren't numbered, were they? They were just kind of out there.
They were not. And yeah, it was interesting. So in 1950, we decided we need to know who's got which one. So ever since then, they have been numbered. One of the things it showed us was that people used to have to bring them back to get the name on them. We would put the right name on after they had had a night of celebration or whatever. And of course, in the course of the evening, a lot of them would get kind of just stood on the same table somewhere. And we realized that a lot of people went home with not the one they had been given. It didn't matter. They were all the same. But we could tell that had happened because we had the serial numbers. We knew who had received which, never had somebody ask us to go back and find the one they should have had. So that wasn't the problem.
Did you get protective of the Oscars over the years? Did you say, no, we can't do this or we can't do that?
Very much so, because it started to be abused. It was so famous and so associated with elegance and class and whatnot that people started, working Oscars into advertising that had nothing to do with the movie that had won. They just thought this is people like this, so we'll put it in our ad. So we had a copyright issue, and copyright, the way the copyright laws are worded, you have to defend your copyright. If you know that somebody is using your mark and you don't object, you let them do that publicly, you know they're doing it and you don't object, it can become generic very quickly and you lose the right to claim it as your mark. So yeah, you are kind of forced. And a lot of people do it innocently. So we always had the law firm write them a nice letter saying, I'm sorry, but we can't really allow you to make chocolate Oscars. That's our mark. You can make chocolate anything else, but we'd like you to stop making chocolate Oscars. And some of them would say, to hell with you, I'm making them, and then you sue them.
When you go to any of those souvenir stores in Hollywood, there's an Oscar-like replica that you can buy. And I'm sure that just drives you crazy when you see those things. You say, get that crap off there. You're not going to take our glory, right?
Yes, but they can't look exactly like an Oscar. We have gotten the court mandate that it must differ in several ways. And if you'll notice, the award titles are not ours. You can't say best actor. You can't say, best picture. You can say best dad. You can say best whatever. But again, these are modified from what a real Oscar looks like.
Well, what I found odd about those is they kind of look like what you say the first description of an Oscar was, where the arms were kind of out. Those bogus ones look like what they were actually trying to do back in the day.
It's not a coincidence that they started looking at those earlier ones and thought, well, let's make it more like this. And technically, our copyright wasn't for that one with the alignment look.
Right. They always, and I hate this every year when people say, oh, the viewership was really down this year. I don't care. I don't care that viewership is down. And they look to try and kind of find other ways to juice it up, which I don't think they need to do. I really think that's a stupid direction to go in. And they came up one year with the idea of having like the most popular film.
Yeah.
And I think that's just an idiotic idea, but maybe that's just me.
No, it's not just you. You're right. It's sort of spectacularly pointless. It means you don't understand what the real ones are about. If all you want to know is which one made the most money, we know that as the years going along. We know which one right. was the most popular. This is about something else. And fortunately, having proposed that business of the most popular Oscar, they backed away very quickly. So,
well, I hope they get rid of that idea because I think it's a stupid one. And if they really want to do something, they keep show the other awards that we don't get to see. I always miss, here I am now, sound like I'm lecturing. I'm terrible at this. I miss seeing the honorary ones where they have that big night. I would love to see those people at the real ceremony. I think that's a cool thing. And
it is a cool thing.
They it's let them happen stand up. I want more than that. As a hardcore moviegoer, I want every little bit of it I can get.
Well, I salute that. And I kind of feel the same way. But it became obvious that people were complaining, particularly on the East Coast, about how late it was getting because our shows kept getting longer and longer and longer historically. And so that was taking those off the show, even though those were some of the greatest honors that we had to deliver, was one solution that I think it has actually worked out pretty well, but it is a much more intimate kind of thing. It was deliberately made not to be broadcast, not to have a clock or a orchestra leader saying, you know what time it is. You could talk as long as you wanted. And the people in the room for that event tend to be Hollywood career people, and they know why this person is being honored, whereas sometimes the wide audience is not impressed with no matter how great an art director this person was, they don't really know what that is all about.
Would they ever show that show, though? I would love to see it, but maybe it's, you know, it's a streaming service or whatever.
It does not get broadcast in any form. Those awards used to be worked into the body of the show. So they would come one and one and one. There were a couple of times, again, in the early years where this was when it was on radio. They stopped the radio broadcast and did all of those at the end. And people, you know, Betty Davis is there thinking she's talking to a national audience, and she's really just talking to the people in the theater because the broadcast shut down once the Best Picture Award was given.
You mentioned Betty Davis, and Betty Davis is one of those kind of, boy, she can change the narrative on a lot of things. She had said she named the Oscar. She said she had this kind of stormy period as president. There are a lot of kind of falsehoods that she was spreading about her relationship to the Oscars. And you, in your book, you debunk her theory about being the one who named Oscar. And in fact, the person who named, do I dare say it?
Yeah.
Was somebody who just worked in the office, and it kind of legitimately bore out that this is exactly the person who named the thing. Not Betty, not somebody, not Margaret Herrick. She wasn't the one either. And, you know, why is it that those kind of myths get going? Is it because it sells, because it's a star?
Yeah, I think so. Well, at least in Betty Davis, who incidentally is no relation to this Davis.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But it made a good story, you know, and then she told it for years. She did have a husband at the time she got her first Oscar, whose middle name was Oscar. And so that made an amusing story and whatnot, but it wasn't true. And we could point out how the word had been used to identify the statuette 3 years earlier than when she won that first Oscar. So it wasn't true. And in a book late in her life, she got tired of being called on that and said, okay, I admit, I didn't really do it. Somebody else named it Oscar. So then we have to start working through two other stories. And I found finally another candidate, as you've indicated, but I'm not going to give her name here. You have to get the book.
You have to buy the book. Of course, you want to know that. But it is, I find it very fascinating that Hollywood is a myth town anyway. Yes, we must have the book. You know, leaving the Academy, what was that like for you? Was it hard to say goodbye on a day-to-day basis?
It was. I did it for a long time, 20 years at the top of the staff. And I thought, we're having this conversation on a day when one of our best-known political figures has just laid down her her mantle. And I kind of felt the same way. I've done this a long time. There are lots of good people out there that can do this job. Let's let somebody else have a chance. But yeah, it was not fun because it was a great place to work. I mean, not just that you're working with some of the great actors and directors and screenwriters of all time, but the staff itself was so knowledgeable and so fun just to sit down and talk about movies with. Yeah, it was hard to leave, but it was time.
Oh, well, I'd be there working until they kicked me out. That would be the deal.
Okay. Well.
But I once talked to Ernest Borgnine, and I said, what is it like then if you're not going to the ceremony? And he said, well, I would always take my Oscar and put it on top of the TV. And then when we'd watch the show, I'd say, we got ours, baby. We got ours.
I had not heard that.
Oh, yeah. Whenever I know anybody has won an Oscar, the first question I ask them is about the Oscar because I'm fascinated by it. And Peter Ustinov's wife told me about the Oscars, but she couldn't speak English. So it was very difficult for her to talk about it. But you go, two, we got two. So, you know, it's fascinating. And I'm always curious about where they put them. The idea that they would put them in a bathroom is just absurd to me. I would never do that because of the water. I mean, that ruins the coating on the thing, you know?
The story that got repeated over and over and over. In fact, I actually tracked this down. How many people had claimed that they used it as a doorstop?
Oh,
and you can find that story going from one person to another. And I'm thinking that many people never stop doors with an Oscar. Who has doorstops these days anyway?
Right.
So it's a good story. It shows, well, I've got one, but it's not all that important. You know, that's the point of that story, I think.
I'd be putting a light on it and you'd have to come in and stand behind a rope to see the thing. That's how I would treat it. But that's me, right?
Right.
Your next book should be, where do you keep your Oscar? And ask everybody that you can find where they put it, because it'd be fascinating to know, you know, how does it play in their life? Is it that important? Is it something they try? And, you know, you hear about ones who say they're in the closet or, you know, oh, it's with my kids have it or, you know, oh.
My experience in people's homes is that very few people put it right out in the living room. I think they see as maybe too much. But on the other hand, when you wander into a different room, you may notice there's a little cabinet, a section of the bookcase where it's beautifully lit and there's no chance of missing it. I think most people have them where they're visible if you move around in the home, but not so it hits you in the face right when you walk in.
Well, I asked Cloris Leachman about her Oscar because, you know, come on, Cloris would tell you anything, right? She says, oh, yes, let me think. I have a cupboard that has Emmy, 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 and then there's an Oscar. I thought, oh, that's great. You know, I have it there, dude. It just lets you know subtly that, hey, I have 8 Emmys and 1 Oscar. So not bad, is it? You know,
it's not bad at all.
It's well, then did they give you a parting gift? Do they say, here now, because you've done so well all these years, you're getting an Oscar?
They didn't do that. That would be, you know, no. What they give you, is a gold lifetime membership card in the Academy.
That's good.
No, it's not bad. It's very nice. And now I'm going to embarrass myself because I couldn't tell you where it is right now.
Oh no!
It's with my passport. It's
like my Social Security card. I don't know where that sucker is, and someday I want to collect. So. Yeah. Right.
Well, right.
Then, do you go to the Oscars then when you're not working? I mean, have you been to the Oscars in recent years?
Not in the last couple of years, with the COVID and everything, it got more complicated than it seemed like it was worth the risk. But the Governor's Awards this year are 2 days from now, Saturday night this week, and I've got the tux out and pressed, so I am going to that, and hope to see some old friends.
That's that show that I want you to air on TV.
Now, I know.
It must be, you know what I think it is? I bet if they swear a lot at that thing and they don't dare put it on television. That's why they...
Well, I won't say it's absolutely devoid of swearing, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, good. Well, I say thank you so much. And thank you for doing this book, because as an Oscar nerd like I am, I devoured it. I was just really intrigued with all of the minutia that you are able to bring out that I didn't know how we would ever find out this information. I found it utterly fascinating. And I think anybody who stands there and watches the show for 5 minutes would be intrigued by what you've written.
Oh, that's very nice to hear. I really appreciate it. It's great. No,
you've done a great job. And there you go. And you should get a doctorate for it, because I think that's like a thesis.
Yeah, I was lucky. I found a lot more things I hadn't expected to find, and it was fun. But it took, I told people it was going to take me about a year, and it took me 11 years. So
and I think it's one of those things too, where you tell the people who are officers, don't take good notes, because if you take good notes, somebody's going to find them at some point and they're going to use them. Right. Yeah.
Right.
I bet now it's just like the list of the members who are at the meeting and just say discussion was held and that's it. But in those days, it sounded like they really opened up about everything.
They did, although there were always some things you wish they had given you a little more information about. I'm still puzzled, as I say in the book, about the sudden appearance of the Supporting Actor Awards. It's never discussed. There's never any discussion about it. There's never a committee that recommends it. Just all of a sudden, 1 year, boom, there's two more acting awards. And I have a theory, but I don't have any facts. So
what's the theory?
I think Frank Capra, who was president at that time, may have cut a deal with the Actors Branch, not the Actors Branch of the Academy, but the new Actors Guild, which had been very hostile to the Academy. They were just angry about so many things. And I think he said, look, suppose we give awards for supporting work in acting, and you guys shut up about your war against the Academy. And there's no records at the Actors Guild or at the Academy that indicate a deal was cut. So who knows?
Well, are there going to be other categories? I know they've talked about stunt work as a possible category. And people have always said, oh, comedies are always denied their true, you know, what they should be given, and there should be a comedy award. Would they ever do things like that? Or is that just, no, don't even think about it?
Well, I mean, people always say that the Academy doesn't understand how difficult it is to make a great comedy. Who do they think makes all the great comedies? I mean, of course they understand how difficult it is. The town is full of people who made one great, you know, who wrote one, or, you know, the lightning flashed, but the next three didn't work. They know how hard it is. The problem with making a separate category for types of films, and I don't mean like documentaries or animated, but kind of genres, is that it becomes the children's table. It once you split best actor, best picture, then there's no real best picture. And I think a great comedy, and there have been lots that have won the award, deserves to get the full award and not a second place best picture.
I do think that the best animated feature has undercut a lot of good, really good movies that could have been a best picture, but they figure, well, we'll give it this. And then that's kind of its place.
Well, that's a version of what I was saying.
Yeah.
There have been a couple that got nominated at least, but it would be really nice to see an animated film go the whole way some year.
I am ready for it, can I tell you?
All right.
And if you have any poll, I want you to get an honorary award for Ron Clements and John Musker, the two animation directors who really got that second whole golden age going, and they're ignored. They were nominated at a couple of points, but the real big ones that got them going, they never won for.
Yeah.
So I think they deserve an honorary award, but that's just me.
All right.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And keep up the good work. There are more books in you. I know there are.
Well, this has been fun. It's nice to talk to somebody that A, has actually read the book, and B, loves movies and wants to talk about movies. That's great.
Well, thank you. And thank you for all the work you've done too. This is great.
So that was Bruce Miller and Bruce Davis in conversation just last week. I think we recorded that on Thursday. And in the interim, like we said in the intro, we've had the Governor's Awards where Diane Warren won. One of my favorite little bits was the where Oscars go to Oscar heaven and how they...
Well, and who knew that they had a tie into Fargo?
Exactly.
You know, the wood chipper in Fargo actually paid off for the Oscar people.
Exactly. So... yeah, we'll have links to where you can score the book and contact info for Bruce Davis. Huge thanks for his time. Thank you, Bruce Miller, for your time. And yeah, we'll be back next week with more stuff. Hope everybody has a safe and lovely Thanksgiving. And yeah.
Be something good and stream something good.
When you say that, you've said it all.
That was it. It was gone.